I'm Johnny B. Good, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Every family has an origin story, one passed down through the generations. Mine happens to be a mystery involving my great-great-grandmother left behind in Sicily. I'm Joe Piazza, and my new podcast will transport you to the gorgeous island of Sicily as I trace my roots back through a whodunit for the ages. Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay.
And me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
I am so excited about this podcast, The Bright Side. You guys are giving people a chance to shine a light on their lives, shine a light on a little advice that they want to share.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
This is Pridecast with Jonathan Bennett
and James Vaughn
on iHeartRadio.
Happy New Year. It's a new year and it's a new Pridecast. I'm your host, Jonathan Bennett, joined by my handsome, hot, and happy I married him husband, James Vaughn.
What would the alternative to that be, baby?
Oh, there are so many H words I wanted to use, but they wouldn't let me.
Why is it always the H words, too? I'm trying to figure
because
this out.
Because it was husband. What rhymes with husband? Gusband. Musband. Pusband. See, those words are all stupid, so I had to use the first letter, like H, because it was like, instead of doing rhyming words, I did onomatopoeia, where it's the same letter of each word.
I'm letting you talk yourself out of this hole, baby. Go ahead.
You know what I mean? Like each, no, I'm not crazy. Each letter starts with the same, each word starts with the same letter, so it's I did onomatopoeia.
Very good, my love.
Thank you.
Very good use of the word onomatopoeia. I'm glad you were able to include that.
Thank you.
So we are actually in Park City right now, sharing one headphone that's on a cord between the two of us. So we are
because someone sitting at this table, someone sitting at this table did not pack the headphone splitter.
Oh, baby,
James.
I'm sorry you forgot to do that.
It was me. I forgot to.
In New York, were you?
This is marriage, guys. This is what it is. Did you pack the headphone splitter? No, I didn't pack the headphone splitter. Why? Because I forgot. Because I was too busy looking at how beautiful you were, babe.
I wasn't even there.
I know. I was by myself.
Good excuse.
I was watching you doing red carpet stuff.
Mm.
Yeah,
okay.
So that was fun.
Okay. I guess that's a decent excuse.
Yeah, that was fun. You were just... By the way, if you want to see how fat my husband's
baby,
body is...
No. We're not having this conversation. Why are you
because
doing
this? Because it's
so
good.
This is a family
just
podcast.
I know, but if everyone wants to see a good fitting pair of pants, go to my Instagram. James looks really good on the red carpet. That's all I'm going to say. That's all I'm going to say.
It's the right kind of material.
It's the right kind of material.
It's the same material we had at our wedding.
A good butt.
To
my butt
yourself.
Did not look like that in the wedding.
Because
you've got
to go a size down, my love. If you make it to where you can barely move in them, then that's when everything looks good.
Oof.
That's the secret.
But
go a size down, stretchy material, and just know you ain't going to be able to walk.
If anyone's looking for any good material online, just head over to my Instagram. It's got some great stuff. But we were in New York City. That's what we just got back from.
Yeah, because we got to... Well, I guess if you're listening to this, you probably
know. Yeah, you know. We hosted the ball drop in Times Square. Hashtag ball drop. We hosted New Year's Eve, Times Square 2023. Me, James, and Jeremy Hassel, one of our other hosts. And we got to basically be the first. We made history, really. First husbands. Me and you were the first. Well, Jeremy's not one of us, like our husbands.
But we still love you, Jeremy.
We still love you. But he's not in the relationship. It's not a throuple. Me and James were the first husbands to host the ball drop in Times Square on New Year's Eve.
Which is pretty cool. Okay, actually, it's really cool. Like, sometimes I have to, like, stop myself from, like, geeking out about this stuff. Because, man, what good that would have done for us to see 20 years ago when we were starting our careers to know that, like, there could be two out gay men actually getting to work together and do some really cool stuff like that. So, I don't take it lightly that we get to have that moment together, baby.
I don't either.
It's pretty cool.
I don't. Well, you know what I did take lightly? The rain. Okay. Because it rained for half of New Year's Eve.
Mm-hmm. And which made it fun because it was different.
Except my hair looked like crap. But
I think your hair looks beautiful. I like a nice little flat hair on you, though.
I know that's
you
really
like. You like
weird.
A large hair sometimes.
I like
a Texas lady.
I like
hair.
A Texas. No. I like a Texas Karen hair.
Like almost like a Texas fifth grade school teacher that always speaks to the manager.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh like my gosh! Lift. What we were watching, where the girl kept growing a new layer of hair to speak to the manager.
I think our guest is in the waiting room.
Oh
Thank
my gosh.
God! I'm so Raymond. Happy that you have cut this conversation off.
Raymond, our producer to the stars. Hi, Raymond, we have a special guest here today. He's a TV legend and a superstar,
and he's our friend.
And he's our friend.
I really like this
but
guy.
He's really
and we wanted to have him on Pridecast since the beginning, and the schedules and the stars finally aligned.
We have the one and only Kirsten Kressley joining us, ladies and gentlemen.
Hello, you gorgeous ladies. Look at you.
He is a mountain among men in the industry. He is the best there is. The one and only Carson Kressley is here.
Woo, oh my gosh. I was getting excited from that intro. I was like, is Paul Lynde coming back from the dead to be on this program? But I'll take it. I love
well,
it.
Well, Carson, so you know. Sweet.
You know.
Just happy you're here.
You actually remind me of Paul Lynde a lot, baby.
Okay, someone else said that.
Yeah.
Sharon Lawrence and Treat Williams both said I remind them of Paul Lynde on set.
I think that's a lovely compliment, I think.
I think so, too. I think. Jury's
I
still
mean,
out on
comedic
that.
Comedic genius. I'm not sure about
I'm yet. Not that funny.
I think you're much cuter than Paul Lynde.
Thank you. Where are you, Carson? Are you at home in your with your horses?
I am. I'm at the farm in Pennsylvania. There's a fire crackling, and I'm sitting in my bemural dining room where I'm being bathed in Appalachian light, and here we are. Thanks
Wait,
for asking.
Because you're like a fashion person that knows all that stuff. What does bemural mean? Bemuraled?
Oh, bemuraled? It just means there's a mural on the wall.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, bemuraled.
I'd be like, we got
I don't
a mural
even
on
know.
The wall.
I don't think bemuraled is even a word. It's like bedazzled or bewitched or
bemuraled. Like, who thinks
well,
to
I just
say
fell
that?
For it. You do.
Bemuraled. It's the first time I've ever used it. It just popped into my head because I'm not usually sitting in front of a mural, but today
Write
I am.
That down, everyone. Bemuraled.
Bemuraled.
Bemuraled. Use it in a sentence.
Invented on this day.
I was bemuraled every time I walk into Carson's house. No,
let's,
I didn't use it.
Let's have a gay spelling bee, and that can be one of the words. Bemuraled.
Your first word is LGBTQ. Can you do it?
IA plus.
Yes,
baby. You passed the trick question.
You know, I'm not just another gorgeous face.
You're not.
No, indeed not. Thank you.
Do you want to try? Jonathan's tapping me under the table.
What?
Because
what
he's going to let me take the. Well, because obviously, Jonathan's a huge, huge, huge Drag Race fan, but I feel like I'm even bigger of a Drag Race
Are
super
you?
Fan. So he's tapping me to let me know that I get to take the reins on the RuPaul Drag Race season 15 questions.
Okay, go.
Go, James.
Oh, first off, we have to start with. All right, I do have to say, I got to go to the premiere party. This past week in New York and see all the girls in person. And the girls in person are girling, baby. They are giving this season. It is 16 superstars on that red carpet. Mm. I couldn't even tell. Usually sometimes in person you can tell like who's the ones that are going to pop and who's not.
Right.
They were all popping. Was that the intention of this season to have 16 juggernauts that really anybody could be the winner?
No, I don't know. I mean, every year when I show up on set and I, you know, see the creative and I see the queens, I'm just like, wow, the producers at World of Wonder, and I'm not just blowing smoke because they're my bosses, but they do such a fantastic job in casting the queens, Ethan Peterson, who also helps them with it. I mean, everybody does such a great job. And yes, there are some seasons where you're just like, I don't know. Like, I love like 9 out of the 12, but you know, these three seem maybe a little shaky. This time, to your point, James, is that they're all superstars. And there's 16, which normally when I got there and I was just like, wait a minute, are there extra? This seems like a lot of gals.
Did you feed one after midnight?
Did I what?
Did you feed one after midnight or get it wet? And they just started multiplying.
Yeah, I know. They're like the trouble with tribbles. There's just more and more every season. But thank God they're all amazing.
Wait, and I think that kind of shows, like, first of all, like, we got to jump into this. So, like, there's 16 girls. I remember last season, everybody thought it lasted too long, or a lot of people thought it lasted too long. I love when it lasts that long. So I'm like, please keep non-eliminating. Like, I would love to see all the girls compete all the way to the end, like how they did on the all-winter season. I thought that was brilliant because you got to see everything they brought. But right away on this one, we're not playing. We are eliminating. No. And I feel like Irene was a surprise elimination, which, again, speaks to, like, anybody could take this thing.
I know. You have to realize, too, that RuPaul's Drag Race is also kind of like the most fabulous game show in the world, in that, like, anything can happen and you have challenges, and sometimes the draw is not your favor, and sometimes you have an unlucky day, or sometimes you just, it's your turn to go. It doesn't mean that you're not a superstar. It just means that, you know, it's a competition series and someone goes home every week and there's only one winner for the 200K.
Which 200K this season? Okay, somebody found some money somewhere. What's going on with that?
I know. I think they adjusted for inflation. I was like, 200. I was like, I'll sign up. Where's my ring?
I know. I was like, also, maybe they just are like, oh, look, let's count the Emmys, right? Let's just count all of our Emmys. And hey, can we have a little bit more money? MTV, thank you. I think that's
maybe
that's where it comes from.
Yes, sure. I think so.
I feel like the girls deserve it, though. Like, the money and time they put into everything they bring, because they got to be ready for every single episode when they get there, right? They bring everything with them for the whole season. Isn't that how it works?
Yeah, they bring everything. They have to prepare. But it's not all about the prize money, too, because there's many a queen who didn't win or maybe was eliminated first and became, you know, an internet superstar. And they have huge careers. They're in movies. They're doing cosmetic lines. They are working in all the clubs, doing appearances, spokesmodel. I just saw Simone was doing something like Cash App. I mean, they're getting big deals. So, yes, the prize money is great, but the show is such a great platform for them as artists and entertainers that they can really, the world is their oyster after they do the show.
Really, they're all winners after doing the show because they can take it and use it.
Absolutely. If they're smart, yeah.
And this, like, James and I talk about this all the time. There's the way that drag has changed from the time before RuPaul's Drag Race. The three of us on this call right here, we're coming up in the clubs, what drag was like.
Right.
And then to see, like, the twins on Drag Race that are like, we've never really performed anywhere. And you're like, I'm sorry, what? So it's evolved in such a dramatic way. I want to take it way back because I think this is interesting to hear. Describe the drag scene you grew up with, Carson, before RuPaul's Drag Race, when you were in the club.
Right. Picture it. Sicily, 1928.
Exactly.
No,
Mayflower had just landed.
I was putting the buckle on my pilgrim hat and I noticed there was a man wearing a black dress. And I said, Priscilla. I grew up, came of age in New York City in the 90s. Mm-hmm. And that was my introduction to drag. It was 1991. There was a variety of drag. There were the club kids, you know, James St. James et al. Mm-hmm. And RuPaul at, you know, the Roxy and Twilo and Tunnel and USA and Palladium and Limelight. I mean, just that list, I'm just like, what a time. I use this line all the time as a joke. What a time to be alive. But seriously, what a time to be alive. I had a 9-to-5 job. I would go to the payphone in front of the Palladium at like 6:15 in the morning, and Junior or somebody would still be playing, and Madonna would be in there, and I would sneak out and I'd be like, I don't think I'm gonna be able to make it to work. And then I would go back inside and dance until like 9 or 10 in the morning. And then that would be like on a Monday, and I would take Monday off, and then I would go in as a normal person on Tuesday. But I was really into it. And so there were club kids, and then there were places like 88s and the Duplex and Marie's Crisis and Rose's Turn, where sometimes drag queens like Barla Jean Merman shows, and I would be obsessed and I'd want to be their friends. And I would, you know, I was pretty charismatic. I befriended them, and I have great pictures from the 90s of like me and Varla eating a giant sausage in the kitchen of 88s. And then there were performance artists, queens, that performed like Misunderstood, that did shows at the Pyramid Club and Boy Bar and all the places in the East Village, the Boiler Room. So you had all these different genres, and Wigstock was happening. That kind of was a little bit of everything, but still more like East Village performance arty. So that's the kind of drag that I grew up with. And then going to Provincetown all these years, you would see, you know, your famous, iconic, your Miss Richfield 1981, your Dina Martina, your Varla Jean Merman. So I was very lucky. I saw the full gamut. And now kids today, I can't believe I'm actually saying that like in earnest.
But we are, yes.
Kids today, and even like post-pandemic kids, like these twins that never performed in a club, are doing everything at home and virtually, and they're on TikTok and they're on YouTube and they're on Instagram. And it's just a different medium. And I certainly have a great deal of respect for queens who, I'm going to be biased. I mean, it's just going to say my personal opinion, and I'll get shade for this, is that when you work in a club and you're out in the culture and you know how to handle an audience, you know how to disarm a heckler, all of that is really valuable. And then on the flip side, some of the younger queens who are really well-versed in social media and know how to, you know, make that 30-second ad, know how to sell themselves in 30 seconds. There's a lot of challenges on Drag Race that are really aligned with that skill set too. So I think it makes for a really interesting playing field in that some of the older ones know the club gigs and the younger ones know the digital gig. And you need to be able to do all of it to be America's next drag superstar.
Exactly. And that's so interesting because you're right. The new TikTok generation, we'll call them, of drag queens that might not have performed as much in clubs still have a really tremendous skill set in this quick, digestible content that needs to be relatable. It needs to catch your eye. It needs to be funny. It needs to have a hook, and it needs to happen so quickly before you even realize it's over. To sell the product or to sell themselves to get that out there.
Right.
So it's definitely, even though it's different, it's not any less valuable. But, you know, growing up from me, I have to say, I love I grew up, you know, going to the clubs and seeing drag for the first time.
Right.
I think our generation, I mean, I can only speak for myself, but we always tend to lean towards the more traditional old school drag because that's what we grew up with. And there's nothing wrong with saying like, oh, we grew up with this, so of course you like it. Like if you're a Yankees, if you live in New York and you grew up watching the Yankees, of course you're going to be a Yankee fan because that's what you're used to. And
absolutely.
That's what's so I always am rooting for. Yeah. I love. They're very good. I'm always, you know, rooting for and always blown away by like the queens that have been through it, you know, that have done the gigs and have shown up to the bars when there are two people in the bar because
absolutely.
It's a slow night and still done their show. And you have to eat that. You have to eat of like, oh man, I got ready and I came and I performed and there was only two people. And you have to have the will and the strength to go back and do it again the next Friday and see if it's any better. You know what I mean? Like there's so much, you know, I think as an actor, I relate to that because going into audition after audition after audition and being told no, and then realizing that I still love what I do enough that I want to go back the next day to the next audition, even though they might tell me no again. So, you know, I think the old school actor in me really identifies with the old school queens because that's what I love. But I have to say, but on the flip side, I'm going to say it. The twins, they impressed me.
They surprised you, didn't they?
They surprised me the first one. I literally was like, ugh, they're going to be TikTokers. And then I was like, I love them. And they surprised me. And I think the edit did a very good job of like, building the way they built the edit of the twins and then let you, they kind of made the audience be like, oh, what is this? And then all of a sudden, boom, flipped it in the last 11th hour and saw how great they were. They are phenomenal.
The minute she sat up in that coffin and said, I'm bored, and RuPaul laughed, I was like, these girls are going to be fine.
Yeah, totally.
It showed that like they just think differently. And it's kind of cool to have a different mindset on that stage because it just expands what drag can do, which is so cool.
Yeah. Drag is, you know, and Rue will be the first to tell you, like, use all the crayons in the crayon box. And there's a lot of different ways to do drag. You can do it on TikTok. You can do it at a club. You can do it when you're 9 years old in front of your mom and dad, like whatever, you know, it's the possibilities are endless. So that's the good thing about, you know, opening it up to all different kinds of contestants.
The first time I did drag, not a joke, when you say 9 or 10 in front of your mom and dad,
right,
I was at my house in Toledo, Ohio. My parents had left. And I put on the Beaches soundtrack.
And one does.
What's the song where she's like, Otto Titzling inventor and Kraut had that song,
yeah,
right?
About the bra, yes.
Yeah, but yeah, about the brassiere, about the bra. I had on my mom's silk robe. I took her a towel and did up my hair the way my mom would out of a shower, where it's like wrapped on the top of your head because I didn't have a wig. And I put on her shoes and I put in the CD player in our living room, the Beaches soundtrack. And then I performed that on video. I videotaped myself with a VHS camera.
Right.
And I actually videotaped it and then cleaned it all up and was like, oh, that was fun. And then I forgot to take the tape out of the camera.
Right.
And baby. And they came home and they saw it a few weeks later when my dad was like, what is this? And I was like, oh, it was a school project.
Wait, and do we still have that?
We have the tape. Let's roll the tape.
Let's roll the tape. Just yes, but you said
that's
performing.
Pure gold. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But they knew.
Wait,
they
that's
knew
really
then.
Cute, baby. That was your first little like.
Yeah,
drag
that was the first
moment.
Time I did drag.
Because we didn't really grow up in areas or eras that allowed us to express that. That's why, like, I've even found like in the
what
last year, like my fascination with like wigs and heels and like, oh, this is so like it's freeing to participate in this. But like I didn't think about that. You got to kind of have that drag moment. What was your first kind of drag moment, Carson? I'm trying to think of mine. That's why I'm going to you first.
Oh. I would, my mom worked in the afternoon, so I would get home from school like at 2:30, like in fifth grade. And my mom was a pageant girl, and she had her like Miss Pennsylvania Dairy Princess crown.
Yes.
And in their bedroom, they had a bureau. But you remember those gigantic bureaus from the 70s? They were like massive early American furniture, and they had like shelves and a mirror and like, it was like a hutch, but you kept in your bedroom. And up on the top shelf was the crown. And I would climb up there and I would get the crown. And then I would rifle through her underwear drawer and wear like slips that you put under a skirt.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Like some coral ones. And I'd make that into a beautiful band-out top. I would put the crown and a wig on because women had wigs laying around in the 70s.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And those little lipsticks that you get from Avon, they were like teeny tiny and they were white and they were perfectly like triangular at the tip. I would put on some buttered rum and then use some as rouge. And then I would carefully take a butter knife and reshape it into the perfect point so it looked like it hadn't been used. And then I would just, you know, primp and perform in front of the bathroom mirror until like 3:30 until they got home. And then I would, you know, rub everything off. But that crown was mangled from me trying to jam it on my head like it was perfect. But I had ruined it. It had become so misshapen from me wearing it so often. And nobody ever said a word, but I'm sure my mom was like, this bitch has been wearing my crown again.
I think mine, now that I think about it, mine might have been glasses drag, if that is a thing. My mom would... Back in the day, my mom would go to the lens crafters to get her eyeglasses adjusted. Like, that would be the thing. You would go. And I would go because they had these little spinny chairs. And I would go on the spinny chair and, like, put on the different, like, the gaudiest glasses I could find, right? And there was this Pantene Pro-V commercial. I cannot remember the script of it to save my life right now. But back then, I knew every dang word, every dang hair flip, every eye movement that this girl did. And I would put on, like, the biggest, sparkliest, gaudiest glasses I could find, spin on that stool, and turn back around and do a full presentation for everybody in the lens crafters. And I think that might have actually been my first...
And that was his route.
Welcome to the family.
Yes,
no, I'm
James.
Just saying, like, I'm remembering it now, and I'm like, all those people in LensCrafters really did give me an audience. Thank you to them. If any of them happens to run up on this Pridecast that was letting little 7-year-old gay me do a skit, thank you.
James thought he was going to be fierce wearing, because, okay, Carson, obviously we can see my husband. He's one of the hottest things in the world. And he thought that when he was going to put on heels and drag for the first time, this is like a few months ago, and just be like Shangela. Like, just be like fierce and do it. He's like, oh, I can do this.
Because I've been around all these fierce girls my whole life.
We go to John Barrowman's house, our friend, and he has all of his La Cage aux Folles outfits from when he did it in the West End. And so it was big enough to fit James. So we're like, oh, this is perfect. Let's put you in a wig and you can wear some of these clothes and come walking out.
And a beautiful heel.
And let me tell you, it was like Fiona from Shrek walking out of the...
She had way more grace than I had.
She had way more grace than you. And it was... But what we learned is that James isn't a heel girl. What? He's a barefoot country bumpkin named Messica. So he's like long hair, no... Because he's 6'4 already. So in heels, he's 6'8. So he's a no-shoe country bumpkin kind of trashy girl.
For now. What? For now. We found her for now. Because, yeah, she when she was first born... she wanted to be something much more fierce, and I could not. So I did shows in Vegas forever, Carson. So I'm used to just seeing girls like twirling and kicking and bopping and everything in these heels. And but so you just think that you'll be able to.
Exactly. I have the same delusion, but you know, our drag persona sometimes finds us. Like, I always just look like Juliette Lewis, and I'm so sorry, Juliette, if you're listening. But I always do. I always do.
That's not bad at all.
Not bad, but like, also accurate.
That's
very accurate. Oh my gosh. I love it. Okay, we're going to come right back with Carson and we're going to talk spoilers for RuPaul's Drag Race season 15. Don't go away.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Elia Kani, and this is Family Therapy.
My best hopes, I guess, identify the life that I want and work towards it.
I never seen a man take care of my mother the way she needed to be taken care of.
I get the impression that you don't feel like you've done everything right as a father. Is that true?
That's true, and I'm not offended by that.
Thank you for going through those things, and thank you for overcoming them.
Wow. Thank God for the limits.
Every time I have one of our sessions be positive. It just keeps me going.
I feel like my focus is redirected in a different aspect of my life now.
So, how'd we do today?
We did good.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy. Listen now on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
iHeart Podcast Update. This week on your free iHeartRadio app.
Fodor's Guide to Espionage, a 60s-era spy story of the world's first and greatest travel writer, Eugene Fodor, as he jet sets around the globe. Tongue Unbroken Season 2. This podcast explores complex concepts of identity, resilience, erasure, and genocide. Table for Two Season 2. Think of the show as a deconstructed Oscar party in podcast form. Each episode takes place over the romance of a meal and feels like you're seated next to a different guest at that dinner.
Hear these podcasts and more on your free iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back with Carson Kressley. And Carson.
Yes.
I know you get to watch all of them, so I need you,
he's there.
You're there. So, first of all, let's go back to one thing. We got to do Drag Race together, you and me.
Yeah, we did.
We got to do Snatch Game, and they sang Frozen for the lip sync. And it was the day I say that, like, I realized if I were to die tomorrow, I'm good. Because I got to be on RuPaul's Drag Race during Snatch Game, and got to see a Broadway lip sync. Like, I'm done.
It's pretty much, the Triple Crown.
It really is. And Carson, you are so friggin' funny. Like, sometimes you would say things, and I'm like, how does your brain think to say that? Like, what happened to you? Where do you get your sense of wit from? Because it's absolutely it's insane.
I don't know. I don't know if my mom drank a lot or what, but I just, you know, I see them come down the runway and things pop into my head. I think it's because I'm very visual, so I kind of express what I think we're all seeing.
Yes, exactly. You say what everyone else is thinking. Yes, observational. You say what everyone else is thinking. So we got this season 15. I want us to have James and I pick our top two.
Stop. You can do top two. Yeah. We can do top. No, I can't do that.
I'll do top two.
There's no way. It's not possible.
No?
No.
Why not?
There's too many. Like I could give you like a top eight, I think.
Oh, eight? No, you could do three.
Okay, I'll do top three. I think I'm just going to throw it out there. I think it's going to be one of the – I'm going to – yeah, and Carson, you're not allowed to move your face because if you move your face
– None of us can move our face. We're gay men of a certain age. We froze
them. Carson, sorry, let me rephrase that. You can't – you're not allowed to move your face anymore. So, yes, perfect. Uh-huh. The Botox is setting in nicely. Mine has just got done.
Like your screen is frozen?
Yeah. No.
If the screen were frozen, I would be like this.
I think – I think it's going to be one of the twins. I think one of the twins. No, I don't think they're both going to make it. I think one. I don't know which one. I just have a gut feeling it's going to be one of the twins.
Okay. Yeah,
and then I think it's going to be. Where's the picture of him? Because I don't remember the names.
Looking at my picture of me with the cast.
Oh, from the show that you're doing. That's very. But we're not talking about
that. Let's see.
Okay.
Oh.
Who's the girl that this one that won today?
Anitra. From Vegas, which, by the way, like, I don't know the names yet. I love my Vegas girls, so I'm so happy to see a Vegas girl thriving on there.
Yes, I agree.
My prediction for season 15, Drag Race, top three, is going to be one of the twins, Malaysia Fox.
Malaysia Baby Doll Fox.
And who's the girl from Vegas I like?
Anitra.
Anitra, hey. Malaysia Fox, and one of the twins. That's my pick. Now, Carson, I'm looking at your face to see if I can read any expression if I'm right.
No.
And you guys, it has been frozen. His face has been frozen. You can't see anything. James, what are your top three?
Because I just met the girls and top I like three. Them all.
Oh, you met them at a certain party.
Hang on.
James right, got to so, go to the premiere party.
So let's just say this. That. All right. First off, y'all are all phenomenal. And I can't off of one encounter. All right. First off, Sasha Colby, since I heard that name. I was like, Sasha Colby's going to be one to beat. Y'all better watch out. So definitely Sasha Colby, I think, is going to be all the way to the end.
Okay.
I love Anitra as well. You know, I'm happy to see my Vegas girls thrive. Mm-hmm. Like, the Vegas girls and the clubs there are the ones that help me feel comfortable in clubs. Mm-hmm. Like, I always have a special attachment to the girls from Vegas. And then I got to say, I'm not doing three. I got to do more than three, baby.
No, you get
no,
three.
No, because I think like Mistress Isabella Brooks is going to get in there.
Okay, that's it. Three. Mistress, you picked it.
No, you cannot stop me there.
Okay.
And gosh, I...
Okay, this...
God, I love
this,
Selena Stittis, but I don't know.
We're done.
No, don't cut me off.
We're done.
Baby.
That's three. All right, don't and when we come back, we're going to talk about Pride with Carson Kressley.
That don't
go away.
Sound right. I'm not done. Help. Don't cut it.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
iHeart Podcast Update. This week on your free iHeartRadio app. Fodor's Guide to Espionage, a 60s-era spy story of the world's first and greatest travel writer, Eugene Fodor, as he jet sets around the globe. Tongue Unbroken Season 2. This podcast explores complex concepts of identity, resilience, erasure, and genocide. Table for Two Season 2. Think of the show as a deconstructed Oscar party in podcast form. Each episode takes place over the romance of a meal and feels like you're seated next to a different guest at that dinner. Hear these podcasts and more on your free iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Elia Connie, and this is Family Therapy.
My best hopes, I guess, identify the life that I want and work towards it.
I never seen a man take care of my mother the way she needed to be taken care of.
I get the impression that you don't feel like you've done everything right as a father. Is that true?
That's true. And I'm not offended by that.
Thank you for going through those things, and thank you for overcoming them.
Wow. Thank God for the limits.
Every time I have one of our sessions be positive. It just keeps me going.
I feel like my focus is redirected in a different aspect of my life now.
So, how'd we do today?
We did good.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy. Listen now on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. So, Carson, this is Pridecast.
One yes, thing I love Pride.
We love talking about is Pride in so many different ways. So, Pride means so many different things to so many different people. And we always ask our guests, what does Pride mean to you?
Oh, gosh. This is just what's coming to me. But
yeah, no wrong answers. There's no wrong answers.
Pride feels like home and like a place that feels like home. And I guess like no place like home. Gosh, I'm ganging it up. And when I first moved to New York in the early 90s, of course, we're still living through the AIDS crisis. I had just moved to New York City. I was just out. It was 1991. And there was Pride, and they had a giant like rainbow flag that went down like miles of Fifth Avenue. Wow. And I remember seeing that and being like, oh my God, I'm home. This is my place. Like, you know, that song, Somewhere. It's just, I don't know if they were playing that, but it gives me goosebumps when I still think about it, that it was just kind of like a sigh of relief. Like, God, I found my people. It's going to be okay. I can just exhale. So that's what Pride means to me.
I think of
Pride in New York City in the early 90s. And, you know, other Prides mean other things to me.
Those know. Have certain memories from a certain time in our life. Absolutely.
Julia.
Yeah. Oh, that was my first Pride I went to was New York City Pride, too. It was in 2000. And well,
I was there.
Yes. Did you go to the pier dance? I did go to the pier dance. We used to go to Tunnel. Do you remember Tunnel when it had the fuzzy room? What there was that was like.
But Tunnel wasn't open like in 2000.
Yeah, it was.
It was?
Yeah, you would go to Tunnel and it was like over on the west side, right?
Yeah.
And you'd go down underneath and there were like rooms, and one of the rooms had like all fuzzy fur on the walls.
Right. I don't remember that.
You don't remember that one? I do. Well, I was there in Limelight.
I'm sure that's, or Limelight was the one that was like a church.
Yes, that was one of my favorites. That was really fun.
Those were the days.
Do you remember the first Pride you went to?
Yeah, I think it was that one, like New York, 1991. And it was just, New York is a great one to go to, first of all. And it's so overwhelming for a kid from Allentown who had never been to a Pride, like going to New York City Pride. I was just like, oh my God, the men, the ladies, the muscles, there's firemen and there's gay police officers and gay teachers. Like all these people that I didn't know you were allowed to even be out were like marching in the street. And it was so impactful for me.
I think that's the representation thing we always talk about. Like when you see people in these other professions and all of a sudden they are out and proud too, it just shows you I really can be anything I want to be. I love that you experienced that, because I feel like my first Pride very much had that same effect on me, because I remember seeing a lot of families at my first Pride. It was in Las Vegas.
Okay.
And I remember seeing a lot of families, and that really hit me, because I was like, oh, wow, like these people can have this dream that we were told so many times we couldn't have. I see all these people having it and just living it loudly and proudly. And it was a really cool thing. I felt very weird that I was in my underwear for that. But,
you know, what happened?
It was a gig. I had a gig. A gig actually got me to my first Pride, which was pretty cool. Because I was not the one I would have had the guts to go.
Well, I mean, honey.
Well, maybe speechless.
I was just thinking about you and your underwear. Because if you look at the pictures of James,
I was too, actually. I'm so sorry.
See, it's okay because the pictures of James in his underwear and like when he was in his like late 20s.
No, this I've was before seen that.
Early 20s, fantastic. Early
20s. Yeah,
I've seen him. I was there.
You were there. He was the underwear.
Listen, baby.
Carson was the underwear.
Like this daddy body.
I was in Vegas in the early 2000s.
Yep. And I saw that like hairless body up on all the billboards.
Saw it everywhere.
Oh my gosh, you guys.
You know, so many people talk about the troubles. We all talk about it because it's very important. The troubles for the LGBTQ plus community.
Right.
You know, in other words, you know, why it's so hard to be gay. Like why it's what's hard about being gay. We talk about that a lot. So we like to flip it on its head. And we like to talk about why it's so great to be gay. And what is so special and why it's so awesome to be gay. So, Carson, what's the best part about being gay?
Oh, gosh. I mean, well, we always have cute haircuts and great outfits. We always look good. So that, I mean, that reduces my workload considerably. So thank you, fellow gay. but I guess in seriousness, I think that here's the thing that I've always been grateful for. I think because most of us feel like we don't fit in when we're younger. And we're like, God, what's wrong with us? And no, I don't want to play soccer. And like, I don't want to do all these things that the regular like boy kids want to do. I think that makes us dreamers. And we're always thinking about, God, well, I'd rather just like be a painter or an actor or like, so not fitting in at the time is very, very hard, but it causes us to be magical thinkers and to think about all the other possibilities because the boring, average, expected ones don't work for us. So you're like, well, I want to do this or do that. And that magical thinking carries you through the rest of your life. And you get to do all these amazing things, you know, like all my high school guy friends, you know, are still in Allentown. And here I am. Wait, I'm in Allentown right now. But anyway, you get my point, is that I think that not fitting in makes you become kind of an artistic thinker. And that is such a blessing in the long run. And it changes your life and the way you view the world. And it really creates this magic that I think we're also lucky to have. And it's why we're amazing drag queens and painters and actors and artists and designers. And people will say, oh, well, that's so stereotypical. You can be a doctor or a fireman. I'm like, yes, you can. But my experience was that, you know, because I didn't feel like I fit in, it's a little bit, you become a little bit more Peter Pan, like I'm going to escape this world and create my own world. And that gift of creativity has been a real blessing for me.
Wow.
I never heard anybody put it like that.
Yes.
And that hits so hard and makes so much sense. I love that. Thank you for putting it so eloquently.
It must be the mural. I don't know.
Oh, were you bemuraled just now to say all that?
I was bewitched, bothered, and bemuraled. And I thought I was feeling artistic and I'm get it out.
Yes, yes, yes. Oh my gosh. James, you and me and Carson, we're gonna talk about gay history.
Let's learn what happened.
Okay,
this
so
week.
Carson, something we like to do on Pridecast, play the music. Something we like to do on Pridecast is to look back at what happened this week in gay history, because before we can move forward, we always have to look back. So James, what happened this week in gay history?
Well, check this out, y'all. There was, back this week in 1973, a documentary series on PBS that followed the Loud family of Santa Barbara, California. Do you remember this, Carson?
I was only 3 years old, but I do know about this show. It was like the first ever reality TV show ever made.
Yeah, right? So it was. And one of the cast members was Lance Loud, and he came out publicly on the show where he characterized himself as Homo of the Year, a title I have strived for every day of my life since.
Same. I did 1974. So
congratulations to you. It's just, but you look at like, that was like the first like representation in that space. 1973, this documentary was, and Lance Loud, like, how cool to have somebody be so loud about it, because think about who might have seen him then that really needed to see him. I'm certain he saved lives. Absolutely. That's what happened this week in gay history in 1973.
And that's your gay history for this
sharing
week.
Sharing that.
Because isn't that kind of so fun? Important.
Yeah, we're all worried about what's new and everything. And I'm a big history buff in all realms. And I think our gay history and our gay culture is so important to preserve and celebrate and remember, because there's so many trailblazers like Lance Loud who made it easier for us. And we get to be here today because of that. So
absolutely.
Thank you, Lance.
It's so the kids. Thank you, Lance Loud. And so the kids can get some education of their history. Play the music, because right now we're going to shine our big gay spotlight on someone. Carson, each week we like to shine our big gay spotlight on people in the LGBTQ plus community or our allies that are doing extraordinary things for the community. So we're going to shine our big gay spotlight on who, James?
California Representative-elect Robert Garcia. By the time this airs, he may actually now just have been sworn in. Things have been a little crazy over there at the house, as y'all have seen. But Garcia actually did this tweet, which we didn't see because we got off Twitter, because it's a rough place these days. And so we just decided, we were like, why even go into that? So, but I have learned from our producers that he tweeted this, which we knew this, but I'm going to read the tweet so you know actually what he said. He said he'd be proudly sworn into Congress on the U.S. Constitution. He says, underneath the Constitution will be three items that mean a lot to him. One, a photo of his parents that he lost to COVID. Two, his citizenship certificate. And three, the original 1939 Superman number one comic on loan from the Library of Congress. That's really cool to hear him share his story and to see Robert Garcia going in to serve the people. And I think it's a really cool thing of like, look at the progress we're making. We are being represented in so many spaces. And it's really sweet that these three things that mean so much to him are going to be part of, if he may have already got sworn in, because this does air a couple of days after we do it. But it's very sweet that's happening. And again, it's just another representation. Representation. People see it. They know they can be it. And also representing us literally in Congress.
Exactly. How great is that?
Carson, do you have anyone you want to shine your big gay spotlight on this week? It can be anyone, famous or not, and it could just be a friend that's doing great things, or anyone you want to shine your big gay spotlight on this week.
My big gay spotlight. I didn't even realize it was that big.
Isn't that
big,
fun? It's huge. Well, it's according to the internet, it's huge and heavy, Carson.
Yeah. I don't know if I can lift it. I'm going to shine it on, since we're here talking about RuPaul's Drag Race season 15, I'm going to shine it on RuPaul, because he's always doing amazing work. But the thing that you all don't get to, I get to sit with him and make the show every week, and people are like, oh, the show is so great. I'm like, yes, because it's a trickle down theory. It's like Reaganomics, but good.
Yeah.
And, all of that goodness that you see on the show and in the production, we have an amazing team, and I'll shine my big gay spotlight on all of them. But it really does all stem from Rue and his sensibility and his heart. And when I work with him, and I've gotten to, do the Oprah Winfrey Show like 15 times and work with Oprah a lot and work with amazing people. And I've worked with Dolly, and there's certain people in this world, Oprah, Dolly, Rue, that have this wisdom and this understanding of life, and they just have been through it and they just get it. And he's that person. So I just, since it's a kickoff of the season 15, why not acknowledge the grandeur and wisdom that is RuPaul, because he's really used his platform to bring love and light to so many people across the globe, and not just through the show, but just in being who he is.
Wow, that's so special. And you're right. There is something getting to be on the show and watch just one episode that I got to watch with you filming, like, and sitting next to him and hearing his comments and like what he says and just how smart he is with everything. It really does trickle down from that. And I think the funniest thing I ever heard, I say this because it was not in the show, but it was brilliant. When we did the Frozen episode and it started snowing at the end, and it was like they had the fake snow in the studio. It was one of those moments where like, I don't think Rue knew that it was going to do that.
Right.
And like they do the Frozen, let it go. And it's all over. And they all right. And cut. That's a wrap. And Rue just side eyes you and me and the other judges and just goes, whose motherfucking idea was that? The snow just like all over all the queens. It was brilliant.
That's typical Drag Race fun that happens, on that judges panel that you sometimes don't get to see on TV.
Oh, so brilliant. Well, I want to shine my big gay spotlight on someone. I want to shine my big gay spotlight on Carson Kressley. Here's why. Yeah. Because as an actor that just came out maybe 6 years ago publicly, and did a movie called Mean Girls and did All My Children, the soap opera. And I lived in the closet for so long. And being in this industry, I remember doing, like, starting out as an actor when I was like 19 and like them telling me that like don't, whatever you do, don't let anyone know you're gay. Make sure you live in the closet. Make sure you don't let anyone know. You'll never work again. And then Queer Eye came out and I saw this show where I watched people be unapologetically themselves and celebrate how great it is to be queer. And all these, and just everything that Carson did on TV, whether it be an interview with Oprah or where I'd see him pop up, I'm like, oh my gosh, he's the funniest person I've ever seen. And he's so smart and he's so proud and he's so unapologetically him. And for me, being an actor at that time in this zone, in the industry, I was petrified to let anyone find out the truth about me. But I remember that seed of unapologetically being yourself was planted from you. It was the first time I saw you on a talk show. And I was like, wow. And I remember thinking to myself, one day, I hope I can be that unapologetically myself and proud of who I am. And you were doing it before there was this movement of loving yourself. You were one of the first people to do it and to be unapologetically you on TV and to make people fall in love with you. So I have to say, one of the first times I saw someone on TV and I go, wow, I want to be like that one day, it was Carson Kressley.
Aw, thank you, Jonathan. That is so nice. And I just, every time everyone says that, I'm just like, thank you. I'm touched. And, you know, I was so gay. I couldn't have not been gay anyway. Yes. I just, you know, but I guess that's the power of reality TV and then capturing like the authentic person. So
exactly.
I'm thrilled and I'm honored and you're just killing the game. And I'll let you know where you can send the 10%. Thank you.
Okay, great. That great. The check's in the mail.
All right. I just got it.
Venmo.
Yes, I think that's a great place to end. But I just want to say as well, Carson, thank you for always being someone that's so genuinely nice in our community, mm-hmm. and someone that always genuinely roots for everybody in the community. Like, y'all, the Carson that you see on TV, on social media, everywhere, that is the real Carson. He's the same if there's a camera there, if there's not a camera there, if there's a full face of makeup, there's not a full face of makeup.
There's always a full face of makeup, but
always.
Oh, yeah. No, I don't even have eyes.
So just thank you for being that, because it's so important in our queer space to have those people that are genuinely good, wonderful humans. So just thank you from somebody who was a big fan of you and then has gotten to know you from the bottom of my heart. I appreciate
it. Oh my gosh. Well, from the heart of my bottom, I thank both of you as well.
And that's Carson Kressley on Pridecast, everyone.
We love you, buddy.
I'm Johnny B. Good, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Every family has an origin story, one passed down through the generations. Mine happens to be a mystery involving my great-great-grandmother left behind in Sicily. I'm Joe Piazza, and my new podcast will transport you to the gorgeous island of Sicily as I trace my roots back through a whodunit for the ages. Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
I am so excited about this podcast, The Bright Side. You guys are giving people a chance to shine a light on their lives, shine a light on a little advice that they want to share.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.